Welcome to Equipping the Corps. I'm your host, Morgan Blackstock. Today we're chatting with Portfolio Manager for Combat Element Systems, or as we call it, CES. We all know communication is paramount on the battlefield, and CES is the central hub for command, control, communications, and intelligence equipment. At the head of the CES charge is their fearless leader, Colonel Ross Monta. Colonel Monta, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Morgan.
Before we get started, thanks for being my first guest this season. I know you don't love public appearances, so I'm honored.
Yeah, we'll see if you say that at the end of this.
I'm sure I will. We'll just have you on again after the end of the season.
Okay.
Can you share a little bit about yourself and your Marine Corps career?
I joined the Marine Corps back in, 95. It's been a few years at this point. I joined, I became an artillery officer out the ghetto. From there, I went to security forces and then back to artillery. As a battery commander, I did fight in OIF-1 as a battery commander going from Kuwait up to Iraq. From there, I went to Monterey and got my master's degree.
Beautiful weather.
Yeah, absolutely gorgeous there. My wife absolutely, that was her favorite duty station by far. And then we came here and I haven't left. I've been here since 2006.
Do you like it here or do you prefer Monterey?
I prefer 29 Palms as an artillery officer, shoot, move, and communicate. That was the greatest experience as a battery commander. It's more fun as a company grade officer. But I love my mission here. I love being an acquisition Marine. I think it's been extremely fulfilling, and I think I've made a good impact on the Marine Corps. But I'll leave that to be said by those that work with me.
Why did you decide to become an acquisition Marine?
Honestly, when I got here, I was in a position where I either had to switch MOSs or I was probably going to be told that my services were no longer needed by the Marine Corps. Because of the timing with going to get my master's degree, made sense for me to switch over. I had done fairly well here. In a short 3-year tour, I had been selected to be a PM as a young major. So I was doing well and I liked it. I liked the impact I was having. And so I decided to switch MOS.
Okay. So when you came here from MPS, was that the payback?
That was my payback.
That was your payback. Okay. Yeah. Were you in CES at that time?
No, actually, most of my career here at Systems Command was in enterprise IT. The old portfolio SES and PG-10, that was where I served the most of my time here at Systems Command.
So you were here when they did the big switch to PEO Digital?
I was actually in SES when that switch happened. I actually was the deputy PEO for the Marine Corps for PEO Digital for a short period of time.
So you have all the background information.
Yeah, I've been here a year or two at this point.
So why did you join the Marine Corps?
Honestly, I joined the Marine Corps. I was a young guy. I'm from Western Pennsylvania. Came from humble beginnings. Was looking to pay for college. So I looked into the ROTC scholarships, and that was really why I joined. I went to school. I fully planned on taking my engineering degree after 4 years in the Marine Corps, getting out and doing some great engineering things for the world. But I ended up really enjoying being a Marine.
We've had a few folks from your team on the show, but can you give us an overview of your portfolio and some of the programs?
Command Element Systems is pretty diverse, right? So it has the basics of Command Element, right? We've got the command and control systems. We've got the communication systems, which is the ground radios and the SATCOM and terrestrial capabilities. It also has the command and control applications, the data infrastructure for the tactical edge, and the infrastructure that goes to the tactical edge. We also have PM intelligence systems, which is all the intel capabilities for the Marine Corps. So all our collections, all our manipulation of that data to provide capabilities to our Marines from an intel perspective. And then the really odd one is PM wargaming is over here as well, which is to bring that analytical capability to our wargaming and capabilities for the Marine Corps.
And I know there's a lot going on right now with PM wargaming.
The naming of the Neller Center right now was a big deal, and we're trying to get there as fast as we can. It's a great capability that's going to bring fully informed wargaming. Trying to get to the finish line on that one is interesting, challenging, and since myself and Mr. John Maurer, my deputy, are the two that started the program, it's kind of interesting to see it start getting close to the end of its acquisition phase and get into actual deployment to the Marine Corps.
It's always nice whenever you're here a long time and you can see something from the beginning to the end, because acquisition sometimes can be a timely process. So being able to see something grow is always nice.
Absolutely. This will be the second program that I've been able to see almost to completion I know it's a bad term in the Marine Corps, but Maquettes. I was actually the first deputy in the program office, and then I was actually the PM when it got to IOC.
I was a project scheduler on Maquettes back in the day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
You don't hear about Maquettes much anymore.
It was an interesting program. I try not to use the term Maquettes, but I try to use all the lessons that I did learn as being the deputy, the PM, and seeing where it was successful and where it wasn't for the Marine Corps. And a lot of those apply to what we continue to do here in Systems Command.
You always have to learn from what worked and what didn't work.
Yeah, I think that it's okay to fail fast. It's okay to learn from your mistakes. I think the ACMAC put that out in his white letter, 1 Tac 23,
yes,
that it's okay to make honest mistakes as long as we're learning from that and moving forward. So I try to leverage those things and make sure I don't repeat my mistakes.
This might be like me asking a parent who their favorite child is, but do you have a favorite system that you've worked on, or one? You just talked about a few that you've worked on from beginning to completion.
So I'll answer this kind of how I answer, you know, when I talk to industry. I'm an equal opportunity hater. I hate all my programs equally, right? You know, my job is to be not the antagonist when it comes to my programs, but to be the honest broker, to hold everybody accountable.
Be a realist.
It's a hard job, right? And sometimes, you know, people appreciate it. Sometimes they don't. Program managers have to make very, very hard decisions, right? And if we make it too easy, if we tell people what they want to hear, really, it's not doing justice. We're not being good stewards of taxpayer dollars, and we're not fighting to give the Marines everything that they need,
yeah,
right? We're placating, and we're not doing it quite right. That being said, I'd have to be honest that my favorite program was probably my first Tactical Collaborative Work Suite back in 2006. We fielded basically a data center in a box to the Fleet Marine Force as an urgent ons.
Okay. Do we still have that today?
No, we do not still have that. It was part of the Maquette. It was getting rolled into the Maquette's program.
Okay.
And it was replaced by the COC program.
This might be a silly question, but in the field with those types of capabilities, that must take up a lot of space.
Right.
So now it's just, you can just carry it on your pack?
No, so that's not what we're what we've done is we put it on the commanders to be responsible for the tents, tables, and chairs, because
okay,
from a capability perspective, that's not really what we're supposed to do. It's really the capability, right? So the ability to have the tracks, right? The enemy friendly and tracks on a screen, right? And that to be correlated with other sensor information, and it's the technology and the capabilities that are more important. So we wanted to focus on that, the network infrastructure, vice, tents, tables, and chairs.
The other equipment that comes with, yeah.
They manipulate that from command to command of how they want it set up. So if we were fielding gear, they would typically not destroy it, but they would customize it. Right, but
what make it work for them.
Right, but what stayed consistent was the IT infrastructure, right?
Okay.
The networking and the command and control applications and those things would remain constant, but everything else would get changed. So we figured, you know, from our requirements perspective and being good stewards, it just made sense not to provide the things that would get destroyed, manipulated.
So tell me about your people. How large is your team? What makes up Team CES? I've heard that you're all pretty great over here.
Oh, I think we're pretty great. I won't sound like some other folks that say mine are the best of the best of the best of the best of the best.
You can. It's okay.
Yeah, well, I don't have to, because they are, right? Oh. And they prove it daily. Throughout my career, I've been extremely lucky to be blessed with great people that I get to work with on a daily basis. These folks are truly dedicated to delivering capability to Marines. They take it to heart. A lot of them are prior Marines. They have family that are in the service. Or they've just decided that this mission set just suits what they want out of their life. Their sense of pride in what they do is phenomenal, and I absolutely love it every day with them. When we have meetings and I'm making decisions, they do not shy away from the hard conversations with me.
Which you like.
Which I really enjoy. I'm not sure how many of them truly enjoy it on occasion. But we seem to walk out everybody a little bit better for the conversation. Even when I'm upset with maybe the decision or some of the actions that maybe have missed a tad bit, I am always impressed with the people and their dedication.
And when people own up to it too, it says a lot.
Yeah, they own it and they love what they do. And so I love it.
I noticed in the hallway you have a periodic table of management and leadership. Is that yours?
No, somebody had that the one day and I saw it. And I absolutely loved it. So I asked them to put it there, so that I could look at it. We laughed pretty hard about it. I don't know if you noticed, but I also have quotes on my door.
Oh, I didn't notice that. No.
Yeah.
On the way out, I'll take a look.
Okay. You got to be real. And if people know you're human, I think it goes a long way. Because like one of my favorite quotes on there is by Teddy Roosevelt. Nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care.
Very true.
I try to be very human, very down to earth. Yeah, I'm the colonel. I try to be careful of the thing.
You have a few
nicknames. I might have a nickname or two, and I might have a reputation, but I try to live up to the good parts of my reputation.
You just get stuff done.
I try to take care of my folks. We'll see.
Everything we're doing here at Systems Command is critical to the way that we're modernizing the force for Force Design 2030. And your program does have a front row seat in that. Can you tell me a bit how what you're doing aligns to Force Design or supports Force Design 2030?
You know, Force Design 2030 is really focused on how are we going to be able to pull off EABO operations against the near peer. When you start talking about the tyranny of distance and what it means to be at the tactical edge in an environment where we do not have air and radio superiority on our enemy, what we do here becomes paramount in a disadvantaged environment, right? How am I going to communicate? How am I going to, and I hate buzzwords. I think most people that know me know that, but I will talk to, a little bit of platitudes of, the kill web, right? How do we close a kill chain? As an old artilleryman, the mantra was shoot, move, and communicate, right? That last piece, especially in Force Design 2030, becomes one of the most critical.
Because we need to be able to talk to one another.
You have to be able to give the target information to the shooter. So, between my intel systems, which is the system that will probably sense something along those lines, make sense out of the data, the correlation, pass that target into a C2 system for a commander to make a decision on, and then pass that information across my communication pipelines down to a firing, unit to be able to engage the enemy. It all ties in. Every piece of my organization does. And then even if you tie in wargaming, that's helping us figure out how that's all going to look when we get to Force Design 2030, as we are freaking looking at new capabilities and new things that the Marine Corps needs and integrating those into that very robust infrastructure to close kill webs.
How do the intel systems and the C2, your systems from CES, do those tie into our other portfolios as we're thinking of the kill chain and the kill web? Are we also taking your systems and putting them into like JLTVs? How is that going to function? Or working with our fire support systems? Do those tie together or are they separate systems completely?
They are separate systems, but we have to tie them together.
Okay.
Right. So when I start looking at like my PMC2S team, they have CDN, which is the hosting platform for a lot of our capabilities, right? A FATIDS, which is a fire support system, will be expected to ride on that system.
Okay.
Right. Our radios will be incorporated into the different vehicle platforms. NOTAM Network on the Move is one of our systems that is put into different vehicle systems as well.
So a lot of interoperability between.
There are.
Yeah.
We look for CD&I to tell us what systems that's supposed to work on and how it's all supposed to be done. But like everybody, we're all overtasked and under-resourced. We do a lot of it internally, trying to make the best out of what we got and to look at efficiencies, because typically we're given requirements that are stovepiped. Build this wicket, and here's what it has to talk to. What we find is there is a lot of redundancies amongst the different systems, so we're trying to maximize efficiency, reduce that redundancy from a hardware and a software perspective, so that we can reduce the equipment that a Marine has to carry to the field, whether it's a grunt or an entire unit from a comm equipment perspective, and make it more efficient, resilient, and swappable. It will be there someday where I can put Intel software on C2 hardware, right? So that the commander doesn't have to take a set of Intel hardware.
Two separate pieces.
Yep. And so it can be interoperable. And if he has to make that hard decision, or if a piece of gear gets broke, he still is fully operational capable because it can run either the C2 or the Intel or both sets of software on one piece of gear. So he has resiliency at the tactical edge.
What are your thoughts on how to, I don't want to say remove the red tape, but make requirement building more efficient instead of stovepiped?
One of the things I try to look at is how we work with CDD, right? They can write changes to their requirements relatively quickly. for me, how to remove the red tape is you have to have a base requirement of some sort. Yes, we have antiquated old ones that have a ton of updates to them, which becomes cumbersome, right? When you try to do requirements traceability matrix, becomes very cumbersome. If we have a good working relationship with the FMF, CD&I, CDD specifically, McWill, our vendors, and you know RPM guys are looking at what we can do, we can have a conversation about what is important and what is not with the budgets we have, right? Because that's the one thing we can't change really fast is our budgets. The PBBE is cumbersome.
What's the PBBE?
Planning, programming, budgeting, and execution, right? It's okay. It's the model for how we get our money, right? You're familiar with the POM cycle. You've heard that term, right? The PBBE is the overarching thing, right?
So you to go into the
planning, programming, budget year, and then execution year.
Okay.
Right? Typically at Systems Command, we inform the planning and programming, and we are intricately involved in the budget year, right? And the execution year, because execution's all us for getting the gear out the door. Within the budget year and execution year, you have limited flexibility, right? And that planning is way out, right? So you're kind of in
like 2 years, 5 years out?
Well, the POM process is five years out, but you're 2 years out for your POM cycle, right? So we're just closing 26. POM 26 is just closing. We're closing
the books
on
that. And a lot can
change
within those
2 years. Yeah, between, you know, the close of 23 and the beginning of 26, a lot can happen. And so you do have your budgets, but those requirements, as long as you're able to have good conversations and find where they're willing to accept risk, the fleet and us, we can get to a solution faster. Now, we also have to bring in what we do here. Contracts can be inflexible sometimes. I don't mean the competency. I mean the actual written contract itself can be inflexible. And so we've got to find better ways to do other pieces of it too. But from a requirements perspective, I think if you're willing to be open to changes, and they are as well, and you can come to an agreement, it's not that hard once you have the approved base document, the ICD or the CDD signed off by the AMROC and the JROC, which can take 2 years. But if you have a base document that you can modify and write letters of clarification through, you know, right now at CDD, it's General Lightfoot, and he's been great about it, and so have a lot of his predecessors, we can make changes relatively quickly. And if the budget and the contracts allow, we can actually get after things a little bit faster.
Okay.
So we are making progress there already. Fellow colonel that just recently retired over there, him and I made a lot of great agreements over the last 2 years, and we codified them with documents that enabled us to continue to pursue capabilities and award contracts that make sense and get after capabilities that are viable within the budgets that we have.
And especially with the systems you work with, technology changes so fast. And so to make sure that we're keeping up, we have to constantly probably change our capability or update our capabilities.
Yeah. And it's not easy. We're still, you know, building onto legacy systems. At some point, you know, and again, I'll reference back to the ACMAX white letter guidance to the force about where do we take risk now, i.e. sustaining something and maybe not modernizing a current piece to leapfrog to the next technology so that we're setting the conditions for faster iterations on more current technologies by building onto legacy systems and creating, you know, a Frankenstein capability. So there's going to be a balancing act between that, like, you know, and it's not going to be easy.
Change is never easy.
Change is never easy, but we don't have the budgets to do both. Marine Corps gets a lot of money to do its job, right, and to buy and procure things and acquire things for the Marine Corps, but it's not enough to do everything, right? So we're going to have to make some really hard decisions and be very creative in how we think.
So there's been a lot of buzz around JADC2, Project Convergence.
Overmatch.
Overmatch.
MAGTAF C2 MVP.
But what role does SysCom play in these projects?
We provide some equipment for some of the experimentation that's going on. But really, we need to be the expectation managers when it comes to these capabilities. JADC2, I won't say is a buzzword, but it is ambitious. Right. It ties into MPE as well, as you talk about that overmatch, a MAGTAF C2 capability that a lot of people talk about as well. When it comes to those ambitious goals, like we were talking about earlier, there's budgets, there's constraints, right? And we can work within those constraints. But again, there's limits to it. There's current capabilities. There are documents like PDOCs and RDOCs that affect our budgets, right, that become part of law. We tell Congress how we're going to spend it, and then they approve it exactly that way in law.
And you can only spend it that way.
Unless we go back to Congress. Yeah. So we have to be the ones that are, when they're coming up with these ideas, not to say no, not to argue about whether they're good ideas or bad, but to talk about, this is what we can do. These are the budgets. This is what we currently have planned. If you want to make that change, here's what it's going to take. And we can be looking to the future, and we can be looking at new capabilities that will enable us. But again, we have different constraints. And there's that three-letter word that gets in our way called the LAW, the law, right? It does govern how we can do things. Now, there's a lot of room in the gray. There's a lot of things that aren't explicitly we're told no. And we need to exploit some of that, right? There are new capabilities and new things that we can do in acquisition. But if you don't know what the no's are and what the yeses are, you can't run in that gray area, right? And get your job done. Long way of saying our position in this should not be to say no, but to explain the limitations, explain what we can do and what is technologically feasible with what we currently have and what we're planning on doing. And if anybody wants to make a major shift, our job then would be to also explain, here are, and I refer to it as unnatural acts, right? Going back to Congress and explaining a major change, right, in the budget year, because that's hardly ever received well.
Does that happen often or no?
No.
No.
It doesn't, because typically when you show a change, right, especially if it's just a program office, Congress doesn't like it and they will rescind your funds, right? Okay. They will do some, they don't like you changing your story, right? Because, hey, no, you had a plan, now it changed, and if you can't explain it well, you're not being a good steward of taxpayers' dollar, right?
Like, why is it suddenly changing?
Why are you subtly changing, right? So if something is that important that the Marine Corps, and I don't mean Systems Command, the Marine Corps is going to make a change, we're really going to have to get a Marine Corps message together, because it isn't going to be a portfolio manager or a PM that goes up to Congress and can explain it. It's going to have a little bit more weight behind it, so that when our senior leaders are briefing Congress, the story flows from them through us and our programs and our planning and our experimentation and the whole kit and caboodle of how we're doing these things.
I'm learning a lot more about congressional lately that...
No, I'm sorry for you. I know more than I ever wanted to about congressional stuff. Oh, yeah. I'm not a politician, so, and I don't want to speak badly of our congressional.
I agree.
Yes, they're great people.
They are. They're important. We need them.
We do.
Much of Force Design relies on the feedback from wargaming and various scenario development. How have you been involved thus far, and what do you see your role in the future?
So I've been on the periphery of most of the wargames that have happened, right? Where Systems Command is really on the receiving end of most of that. Kind of like we were talking about before, we inform, right? Here's current capabilities. The wargames inform based on capability gaps typically. Okay. Right. A lot of this experimentation, I would say we watch and we try to make sure that we gather the right information from it. But sometimes experimentation is pretty out there. Right. It's looking for something way in the future, and it's not based in current technologies that we can really chase. Right. That are viable.
I can't wait to see the future of, I know most people probably won't agree with this, but the future of AI and just how it shapes in the next like 20 years. It's really interesting.
I think even in the short term, its ability to help us do, you know, increase the OODA loop, right? The Boyd cycle for our commanders. I think that's going to be phenomenal. Its ability to correlate data, to be able to provide options to a commander that as it's developed, it will get more reliable. That reliability and speed for decision makers to have not just data, but information.
It saves lives.
It will help do a risk calculus for commanders. And that risk is near and dear to my heart, right? As a prior Marine, nah, not a prior Marine, but as a Marine.
You're still a Marine, sir.
But as a Marine that's been in combat, those hard decisions, having to put Marines in harm's way, right? The more information you have, it's not going to eliminate that risk, right?
Or the feeling that comes with it.
Or the feeling of putting somebody you think of like a child or a brother or a sister. One of your Marines, there's nothing easy about sending them on a patrol. There's nothing easy about moving forward in combat. It's not a comforting feeling when you have no data, when you're told just move forward. So for me, what we do here as a, you know, as a combat veteran, it means something. what that data does, what our C2 systems do, the ability to have more informed decision making for those commanders, I take it very, very personal.
Okay, we're going to backtrack a little bit to last year. Your team awarded a contract for a multi-channel handheld radio system that had an initial savings of $82 million, which is quite incredible. Lots of money for taxpayers' dollars. Are there any updates that you can share with this program?
I mean, the only update I would have on that is we continue to execute on that contract to get our capability up and moving for the handhelds. The testing has gone well on the assets, and we're moving forward with coming up with the fielding plans to get those capabilities out to the fleet.
That's great. Yeah. I know they're excited to see them.
It's, you know, critical because, as most people know, there is a crypto compliance mandate from NSA. The award of that contract and some other efforts that we're moving forward with, the Marine Corps is on track to actually meet the crypto compliance mandates on the timeline set by NSA. So Marine Corps is actually in a really good position right now when it comes to crypto compliance.
We've talked about this a little bit, but we're always talking about partnerships and how they make us stronger. Can you tell me a bit about, we've talked about your relationships with the other PMs and PIFMs here at Systems Command, but what about some of our sister services or foreign partners?
I don't know if you've heard of the home-on-home meetings that we have with the Army.
Yes.
Those are a great effort. We even have a embed in my PFM from PEOC3T from the Army, right? And he helps us do that coordination in those events. So we do leverage, especially in ground radios, a lot of Army equipment and contracts in testing, right? Okay. So we leverage work they've done. You mentioned the multi-channel handheld. Well, it's the same radio as the Army, but we did not use their contract. But we leveraged all the testing that they did before we went out and competed that contract.
And that speeds up our acquisition process on our side, correct?
Yep, significantly, right? We're a little service. We have a lot less dollars and a lot less AAO, right? Acquisition objectives for capability. So they're big dollars at testing. They're big dollars at contracts. We leverage a lot, you know. It's not just the Army. We leverage the Air Force as we start looking at the work being done on M-Code and compliance with that mandate in the NDAAs. And then the Navy with Overmatch and some of the other things we're leveraging from them. So we try not to spend our limited resources when we don't have to and take advantage of what others do. But we don't subject ourselves to just accepting what they do. We don't just, you know, hey, the Navy did it this way. We're going to do it that way to be naval. That's not how it works, right? Sometimes they're a little bit more robust than is required for the Marine Corps. And so we're going to pinch every dollar, and we're going to make it effective, efficient, and we're going to reduce that size, if we can, for the tactical edge. So we're very careful. We work very well with them. We try to align requirements. We've even leveraged CDDs from other services to be able to move faster, right? Their requirements. And so we work very closely with all of them as much as we can. I'd say we do probably better with the Army when it comes to radios. When it comes to some of the C2 systems, we do fairly well with the Navy. And then the Air Force when it comes to any of the space stuff. But Intel is pretty good on its own. We're actually pretty good in the Marine Corps at getting our Intel systems up and running.
Go Marine Corps.
Sure, yeah.
Do any of our C2 systems have to work with the ships, or do they do that all separate in the Navy? Are ours only for ground?
So we focus on ground capabilities, but interoperability with the Navy is obviously, as we, you know, a MU has to come off a ship and go ashore. So yeah, we work pretty closely with them to make sure that those are compliant. And that's one of the big focuses of Project Overmatch, which Colonel Burton, you know, is the senior lead on for Marine Corps Systems Command.
Talking about how the Marine Corps has different requirements for us, it just reminds me of a General Pasagian. Before he retired, he told me a story about boots, because he worked on boots and how Marines have their own special boots. He loved his boots, but...
I love my boots, too.
Lots of thoughts on boots. But yeah, because they were like, just use these boots. And he said, no, we're Marines. We use a different boot.
I've been in the Marine Corps a long time, and I remember how far we lagged behind, and we wore the old leather. We called them Cadillacs, right? So any old Marine will understand what I mean. Marines were stuck in the black leather boots for a long time as the other service modernized their boots. So I can appreciate his vigor for the nicer boots that we now have, right? That don't require a break-in, right? There's a lot of advantages to what these and what SysCom brings.
Yeah.
Right. To that Marine specific mentality that we carry forward and getting the best out of what we do every day. Because Marines, every pound matters.
And boots take you everywhere. You're wearing your boots every day.
Yes, we do. Right. And when you're in the fleet, and you know, it is a different story of every pound matters, everything that we do, every configuration of every piece of gear, from the boot to the backpack to the gear we feel that goes in those backpacks. It all matters. The impact I have had in almost 20 years at Systems Command will outlive my time by a long shot of what I have been able to help people field and get out there. I've done very little of the work, right? I've had some great, phenomenal people do some awesome things.
Don't sell yourself short.
Okay, I didn't think we were going to talk about my height. That's just not nice, Morgan. Come on. We know I'm the short, angry colonel, all right? We don't have to cover that on here.
You brought it up, not me. We can talk about the little man syndrome later. You know, you've said that since you've been here, you feel like you've made an impact. I mean, you've been here almost 20 years.
Almost 20 years.
By the time you retire, if you ever
It will
retire.
Be 20 years when I retire, yeah.
You know, you've made such an impact, not just here. You've, as an acquisition Marine, before you made the switch to acquisition, but is there any advice you would give a Marine that's considering transitioning over to be an acquisition MOS?
It's not an easy decision, right? And again, I'm going to refer back to it. I literally just had a discussion with my Marines on the white letter. Commandant said, we chose to be Marines to fight. That's why you become a Marine, is to fight. And we fight every day to be the first to fight. White letter motivated me. I'm not kissing the ACMAC's rear end, but it was phenomenal. It was motivational.
It was great.
And so you say that and you put that context in there, and then you go, why would any Marine switch to decide to be in a seat for the rest of their career?
Do you miss it?
I do, and I don't. So I talk to the Marines a lot around here, and I talk about being a lieutenant and a captain, being a battery commander. Company grade is probably the best time to be in the fleet, right? But as you mature into a field grade and a senior field grade officer like I am at this point, your impact and your ability to be around those Marines, you're still around them. But you have a back, you know, kind of a, I'm the guy walking around, I'm being nice. Being a field grade officer here, the impact that you continue to have, right? And I said it a little bit earlier, the dedication you have to have to make sure Marines get gear that won't fail, gear that is sustainable, supportable, will enable that mission, will make that commander comfortable in his decisions, enables him to call for fire to protect his Marines, right? You barely would influence that even as a regimental commander in the fleet. Yeah, you're guiding, and that's what we do, right? I'm not taking anything away from my fellow colonels. God, I love them, and I'm envious of their commanding, and then they're out there doing it. But I'm the guy giving them all the gear. I'm the guy, one of the guys giving them that capability, the ability to freaking maneuver and control and engage and scare the hell out of our near peer that a Marine colonel is going to come at him with a regiment that can destroy him. But I'm the guy doing all that. I'm setting the conditions for how the Marine Corps is going to continue for the next decade, at least.
You're still fighting, just in a different
I'm
way.
Just fighting. I'm, you know, as Chesty Poehler would say, I'm just fighting in a different direction. I'm surrounded and I can fight in any direction. I'm just the guy doing that piece of the fight, right? The man trained and equipped, you know, piece of the Marine Corps. We're the equip, right? You can't fight if you don't have equipment.
And a lot of people don't know about Systems Command. Like in the, and so
no.
What we do here is we're saving lives.
It is. And it's a hard job, right? And I laugh a lot, right? Because another one of my quotes, I don't know who said it, it's on my door. Anything's easy to those that don't have to do, right? Standard Marine Corps mentality, right? If I'm an artillery officer and I'm talking to an infantry officer and he wants fire support, if I start to explain to him what it takes to give him fire support, he goes, thanks, Ross, don't care. Just make sure I get fire support there. And acquisition's treated the same way,
yeah.
Right? I don't care how you get my gear and my equipment for me, Ross, and I don't care how hard it is.
I just want it.
Just do it. So we're in a sporting establishment, right? But that's what that means, right? Is I don't care how hard it is. It's your job, Ross, as a Marine colonel, as an acquisition Marine. Get her done.
So what's next for you? I guess you have a few years left.
I got a few years left. I'm hoping I get a little bit more time here in CES as we modernize systems commands infrastructure. I'd like to finish up a few things. Again, I love being around this organization. They're great folks. I'm not quite sure. I hit my 30 and 25, means I have to leave. Marine Corps is going to tell me I don't have to go home, but I can't stay here.
See you later.
Yeah, pretty much. But I'm hoping I get to finish up a few of the things here, some of the integration work I'm helping the team get through or driving them to get through.
Maybe see a few more of the projects.
Maybe finish up a few things. Yeah. I look forward to helping the commander do some of the things he's looking forward to with his modernization of the command.
Yeah.
I'm a Marine, as directed, right? And I've been aggressive about it my whole career, unabashed and unashamed at pointing out things.
We know.
Yeah. Again, I try to live up to the good parts of my reputation, Morgan. And I'll keep trying to live up to that as I go.
POLS, or Program Executive Land System, they also have C2 capabilities, AC2SN.
Right.
How does that differ from what we're doing at Systems Command, C2 capability-wise?
CAC2S, AC2SN, right? All the different acronyms. It's air-focused, right? A lot of the things in CAC2S are about safety of flight.
Okay.
Command and control of aircraft, right? Yeah, they're focused on the air picture and how that ties in. There is some redundancy, right? That COP, that common operational picture that they provide for the air and the ground one that we provide with our C2 capabilities.
Okay.
The integration of those, when you hear the term MAGTAF C2 from some of the seniors and it's in Force Design 2030 update, the MAGTAF C2 MVP, they're talking about bringing in at least those two COPs, the air and the ground COP together. There is a desire for an Intel COP to be fed into that as well,
right,
and along with cyber and all the different warfare domains to be brought into a single COP for seniors, right, above the regimental level to have that capability.
The overall picture within
Within one thing, right? And so they're focused on air, we're focused on ground, there's other people focused on other things, but as the Marine Corps focuses on that MAGTAF C2, you'll see some of the integration be emphasized between PEO land systems and the systems we have at over here in Systems Command. You'll probably see some integration of the GCES, like AFATIDS, right, the fires capabilities, because that's how we're going to get to that better in the future. Again, limited resources, limited time,
yes,
limited everything. It's aggressive. We're going to have some folks that think outside the box to try to force us to get to that consolidated view. And that doesn't mean people have to sacrifice or change. It just means we have to be a thinking organization and find ways to get to better that don't break things.
Okay. Now it's time for the most exciting part of the interview.
Yeah, I hate surprises, but okay.
We like to do the lightning round. So these are going to be four questions that I'm going to ask you, and then first thing that pops in your head, just say it. Are you a morning person or a night owl?
Morning.
What's something on your bucket list that you haven't done yet?
Oh, geez, and rice, gone to Italy.
Italy?
Yeah. I'd love to do one of those food things, those cooking tours of Italy. I would love to do that.
I went to Italy last year. I'll tell you all about it. What's a TV show, book, movie, or podcast you'd recommend?
Murders in the Building.
I love that show.
Of course, everybody's going, really? That's what the colonel said.
I love it. It says a lot about you. What's a song that makes you happy? Or anything that makes you happy?
Anything that makes me happy? My family. It's my solace.
Perfect. Well, thank you for coming on the show.
No, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Hopefully there's some nuggets in there that are worth something to some folks.
I know I learned a lot, so I'm hoping our listeners did too. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Equipping the Corps. Don't forget to follow us on your favorite podcasting platform or on social media. We'd love to hear from you.